Welcome back to the show, everyone. I'm your host, Charlotte Stebbing-Mills, and today I'm joined by Sarah Boutros, who is a relationship writer, podcast host, and the founder of Co-Rising, which is a Dubai-based community with over 2,000 women that's centered around helping its members create more meaningful relationships. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
It's lovely to have you here. I've been seeing your work popping up, and obviously we met actually earlier this year as well in person at an event in Dubai, and it was really nice to hear kind of what it is you're up to and what it is you're working on. But for our listeners that perhaps don't know you yet, and for me to get to know you a little bit deeper as well, I'd love to ask you the question: where, if we was a fly on the wall over the years, what would we have seen to contribute to who you are today and what you do?
I love that question, by the way. It's a great question.
See
So as a fly on the wall, I think what you would have seen is obviously that there was a whole journey that I had to go through myself to get to the point where I felt like this work was important and needed. And for me, that journey started in my childhood, where I had very dysfunctional dynamics within my family. The way that things were handled between me and my parents was not very healthy, because they didn't have the emotional awareness or the maturity to handle situations in that way. And for me, that kind of made me feel that I was a problem in the whole situation, that like my feelings were wrong, my needs were wrong, because they didn't know how to handle it. And that kind of led me to feel like I wanted to suppress myself, because I felt like everything about me was wrong. And I just lost myself in that. But obviously, when I'm a kid and I'm going through that, I don't actually understand what's happening. Yep. I just felt really confused, really lost. I didn't know why I felt so like unconfident. I didn't know how to be myself, because I didn't know who I was to be myself. And I think that kind of just started bubbling up a bunch of issues for me, like a lot of health issues. I ended up with an eating disorder. I was diagnosed with depression and all of these types of things. And when I started seeking help for those symptoms, then I started working through all of the stuff that I realized contributed to getting me to that position that I was in. And what I started learning through my journey of like doing therapy and healing and all that stuff was that my relationship with myself and not knowing who I was causing me to act out in these different ways in my relationships. So for example, I was just hanging out with the wrong people because I wanted to feel the loneliness. I didn't really feel connected to anyone because I didn't know how to be myself around anyone. And through this journey of working through myself and starting to know who I am, I started feeling a need to kind of change the people that I was around. And this is kind of what inspired me to start my community, because the first thing was that I didn't know any of the stuff that I knew, which helped me transform my relationships so much. And I was like, there are so many other people who feel like me, who probably need that space. Yep. Where they can actually connect with other people who understand. Because when I was in that situation myself, I also felt extremely lonely. I felt like people, I felt like I couldn't, how do I say this? I felt like I was alone in what I was experiencing. And it was really hard for me to connect with people on that level, because I was always hiding who I was. And so I was really inspired to start a community where people didn't feel like they had to hide who they were, and people could start understanding more about themselves and why they are the way they are, and how they can start creating more meaningful relationships, first with themselves and then with each other. Mm-hmm. So that kind of was the kickstart to my community. But there was a bit of a lead up as well to that, because when I started overcoming my eating disorder and all of these things, a huge part of the healing was around self-worth and building up your confidence to be who you are. And I started helping women with that as well in a coaching capacity. And I mean, it's all intertwined. And I think like a big part of what we'll talk about today is how much your relationship with yourself impacts all the other relationships in your life. And it was through the work that I was doing with my community and with the women that I was coaching on learning how to improve their confidence and cultivate more self-love that I realized that I wanted to focus more on how that relates to all relationships as well. Because the whole family dynamics and the impact that that had on my relationships growing up, it's like I wish I had a handbook for it. And the more that I've spoken to people, the more that I've realized that other people wish they had a handbook for it as well. So it's just kind of naturally gone down that route as a progression of everything.
It's such a powerful journey that you've been on. And you know, if I was actually a fly on the wall, I would have given you the biggest hug because I know exactly how it feels, because it's tough, isn't it? Because especially if you have come from a more of a dysfunctional family background, you know, because that's where we learn to relate, isn't it? And that's something that I think is often overlooked, you know, and therefore we look inward. It's like, well, I must be the problem if this is how I'm showing up in the world and everybody else just seems fine, right? Because we talk about these things because maybe there isn't a community available like yours at that time anyway for me that makes it hard to do. And it's really, really tricky because it's a hard one to navigate, and common patterns that we see, and I'm no doubt you've seen the similar things or even done this as well, is like you change the people that are around you expecting that the relationship's going to change, and the next friendship or partner that you get with is it's going to be different this time. And then it's like, okay, same problem. And one of my coaches always said, have you ever noticed like when there's a problem, that's you are the one that's always there? And I'm like,
I love that.
it's so fascinating because our I believe anyway that our relationships are very much a mirror of what can be going on internally for us. And I think
100%.
that there's so many ways in which you can talk about relationships and that you can address relationships. And see, we had a, you know, a call before we hopped on for this recording a while ago as well, in prep for this, and we talked about some of the potential challenges that, you know, we've heard people talk about, particularly in our communities. Like, it's hard to date, it's hard to find people that like the things that we do. And actually, it's like we can talk about those things, but actually those things are usually quite surface level, and they're usually almost like the last thing you figure out after you've
Totally agree.
stuff on the inside. You agree?
Totally agree. Totally agree. I did a post about something like this yesterday, which is very, very similar. There's this whole thing on Instagram now that goes viral that people are just constantly talking about red flags to look out for in other people. Like, stay away from someone who does blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, you know, I also have been guilty of this myself, and I know so many other people. We're always looking like outside of ourselves. We're always like, oh, okay, if I need to protect myself, or if I need to have success in this, then I need to, you know, I need to find out where the people I want are hanging out, or I need to find out what red flags that I need to be careful of. But it's like, if you are finding yourself in the same situation over and over and over again, you have to look at the common denominator, which is usually you. And and once you start to work through this stuff in yourself, it's not to say that you know, that you're not gonna be around the wrong people, but it's just that your tolerance to it is so little that it just doesn't stick. And as a result of that, you know, you start attracting what you want when you get rid of those blocks that are getting in the way from you actually having it in the first place.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny you say that. It's like with I guess my journey is similar to yours in some respects, in terms of like kind of perhaps where we started, but the challenges looked a bit different. It was more around you know, it was poor mental health, it was negative thinking, it was suicidal ideation, it was tough, right? And it was an interesting journey to then go inward to understand how did I get there. And what shifted really to some extent was like the way I perceived the world around me. And that played a massive part in how I was then relating to other people. I literally used to feel like people were out to get me. You know, I don't know that I would have ever said that in my own head in those words, but that's essentially how I was behaving. It's like that pure protection mode. And actually, one thing that I noticed years later, I'm an expat, as I believe you are as well. And like I've gone like back home to visit, and often we speak to people and they're in relationships with their families where when they go home, it's almost like they need a break after because it's quite intense, and you know they're living their
Oh,
life here, and it's this like really weird dynamic, right? Yeah, and for us, like we go back and we stay like in our family home, like we revert to childlike behavior sometimes and things like this. But one thing
100%.
I noticed like later was that actually I could be around perhaps some people that used to trigger me before and actually be completely okay with it. They didn't change at all. It was just me that changed. And it was just like, it took years to get to that point. And don't get me wrong, I still know how to push my buttons, but it's just to echo, I guess, what you've said there is like, it's that it really is that internal introspection that really starts to change the game. And I think if we stop looking outward and start looking inward, we might start to see things shift in a more meaningful way.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, and I really relate to what you were saying about how nothing else outside of you changed, but at the same time everything was different because I experienced the exact same thing. Especially like I think it becomes the most obvious around your family, because that's where most of these wounds were created. So it's a very triggering place to be.
It is. And one other thing I like about what you do is you talk about relationships in the broad scope of the word, right? And how do we actually connect? Because often people think relationships, oh, they must be talking about a significant other. And actually, no, we have a relationship with everything, right? And everyone to some extent. And one of the things that we've found is that so many people are struggling with this. Like we often do a lot of different kind of assessments, and we really lean into our community and the clients we work with, and we try to like collect as much information as we can so that we know how we can help them and shape conversations like this. But the information, the stats that we get around relationships is quite striking, and I wanted to share some of them with some of our listeners because often, like you rightly said earlier, Sarah, is that we feel alone in it, right? We feel like it's just us, and we did in literally this year alone so far, after surveying 874 people, it showed that 71% of them are totally stressed out and that's affecting their relationships. Only 11% of people score their relationships as being fulfilling. 67% of them say they're just complacent in their relationships, and 22% say they're just completely unfulfilled. So if somebody's listening to this and they're thinking that they've been feeling so alone in this and don't really know what to do, like I just think it's so important to just really like pause for a second and maybe just recap some of those numbers and just be like, what does that actually mean? Look around the people around you in your life, people in your workplace, the people that you see in the shop. Think of those statistics. Like the majority of them are struggling in some way, shape, or form. So it makes it easier to connect when we have things in common as well, I think.
Totally agree. Totally agree. And I think those stats are crazy. They're crazy and not surprising because, like I said before, none of us are given an instruction manual on how to navigate our relationships. So it's not surprising that people are finding the negative impact of that. Especially, I think if we go based on the fact that most of what we learn about how to connect and how to be in relationships comes from our childhood and maybe back, the generation of our parents were not fully equipped with the tools or the knowledge, and they didn't have such an open kind of mentality to explore these kind of topics and learn how to better themselves in relationships. So we don't learn it, until, unfortunately, we feel like we have to learn it because things are so bad. And I think looking at the stats as well, like if 71% of people are, letting their stress affect their relationships, and 67% of people are saying they are complacent, that's a huge percentage. It's no wonder why the percentage of people who feel unfulfilled is like, people that feel fulfilled is what I mean to say. The percentage of people that actually feel fulfilled in their relationships is so low. And yeah, I think that the information kind of speaks for itself.
Yeah, it really does. And I think there's so many different contributing factors to it as well. And I do think, yes, it's heavily rooted in our early years, but I think there's a lot going on now as well. Like with technology, with the almost expectations as well in society. And I just think that there's so many different factors contributing to it. Like, what do you think, particularly around like the technology piece? Let's not go there. What is what are you seeing? Because you've done a lot as well around like body image and confidence. Like, oh, I'm really curious to know your thoughts here.
So the technology thing is really interesting because when I first thought about this question, I thought, I don't see any unrealistic expectations on my social media because I've chosen to curate it in a way where it supports my vision of what I like, the kind of person that I want to be, and the kind of relationships that I want to have. But then I thought back to my body image days, which reminded me of what my feed was like before then. And it's like when you don't have the awareness and you're kind of just following the societal norms, you're consuming things that are getting you stuck in this comparison and making you feel bad about what you already have without you even realizing it. I don't know what exactly the unrealistic relationship expectations are these days, but if I was to say anything to anyone that was feeling like, they keep feeling like something's missing or they're comparing themselves to somebody else's relationships, it's like, if what you're consuming, you need to pay attention to what, how, okay, you need to pay attention to how what you're consuming is making you feel and the thoughts that are coming up around it. So if you're seeing something on social media that's making you doubt your relationship, I don't always think that that's a bad thing because sometimes there's something very useful in that because it shows you something that maybe you feel like is already missing. And if it's a realistic expectation, which is how do you determine the difference between realistic and unrealistic is a different thing. But, if you start to get curious about your own, thoughts and beliefs, it might actually point you in a positive direction.
Exactly.
But then the other thing is like, social media will never show you the full picture of anything. So when you see something and you think that's the way, you have to remember that it's not because there's so much underneath the surface that nobody sees.
Yeah, definitely. Well, there's a couple of really key things that you've said there that I want to highlight. One of which is that the difference in what you used to see and what you see today, and the fact that we actually do have the ability to consciously choose what we put in front of us. That's one, because actually social media can be a fantastic form of connection. It really can. Does it beat in person? I don't know. I think that's definitely up.
Definitely not.
But I think it can really, it can lead you towards the people that you need to perhaps meet in person as well. And it can be this really thing. And I think we often forget that we have that choice, and we often do the opposite of connect, and we withdraw when we start to feel that sense of separation, right? So it's like, okay, well, that relationship looks like one I want to be in, or that person must have a great relationship with themselves because they can post pictures like this, for example. Often that doesn't spur people on to do better. If it does, it can be,
Makes them feel worse.
yeah, exactly. It makes them feel 10 times worse. And we're doing it like because we're hitting ourselves with a stick rather than actually because it's healthy for us. Or we have the opposite, right? And we withdraw completely. And I think that can be actually equally as detrimental. So when people are recognizing perhaps that they're withdrawing or they're changing their behaviors because of what they're seeing, perhaps when they look at technology, how can they start to really reflect on those thoughts in your mind? So the things that come up.
I think the first part is awareness, because if they're already noticing that they're not feeling confident when they're looking at the way that somebody's showing up online, for example, or the way that their relationship looks online, that's a moment to pause and, like, honestly, just get a journal out and start writing about your thoughts or, like, this person has this relationship and I'll never have this relationship myself. And it's like once you identify what the thoughts that you're having are, you want to dig about three levels deeper to understand what is causing you to feel that way. Because at the end of the day, the way that we perceive the world is based on our own belief systems and things that we hold within ourselves. And two people can look at the same thing and feel completely different things. So when you start taking responsibility for your feeling instead of blaming that other person's relationship for the way that you're feeling about yourself, then you kind of like regain the power to do something about it. So if you're looking at someone's relationship and you're like, it annoys me every time I see that relationship because they have all these things and I don't. It's like, okay, well, why do you not have those things? Why do you think that you don't have those things? And they might say like, oh, it's because I'm not good enough or I'm not pretty enough. That could be an example. And it's like, okay, so if you don't feel good enough and you don't feel pretty enough, what are some of the things that you can do to start building some evidence against that? So let's say, for example, one of the things that I used to do, because my self-esteem was so low, I actually couldn't write a single thing about myself that I felt was good enough. And my therapist told me to start reaching out to people in my life and asking them to share one thing that they value the most about me. And I literally like created a whole notebook full of things that pe other people said about me, and I reminded myself about that. But then it's also like, if you don't feel like there's anything about you that makes you good enough, of course, we don't always want to rely on everyone else's perception of us. But what can we start building in our lives that is going to give us that sense of fulfillment and confidence in ourselves? You know, pick something to get good at, for as an example, to make you feel proud of yourself. And a big piece of this as well goes to the self-compassion that we'll also talk about, which has been a huge, I think, is a huge thing for navigating most relationship issues and self-esteem issues. But yeah, I mean, I'd say start there. Start reflecting on focusing on the positives or of the situation, or how can you achieve that thing that you're saying that you want, instead of looking at somebody else and blaming them for the fact that you don't feel good.
I can relate to so many of the things that you just mentioned there, and I think that one thing that really stands out to me is when you said like just take the journal out and write down your thoughts. That is actually surprisingly a big sticking point for a lot of people. It's like, well, what do I write? Or they are in such an avoidant tendency that they will just continue to push in the opposite direction and actually sit down. And often that can come from not feeling okay to actually look at those thoughts and feelings that are coming up. I remember when I was feeling at my absolute lowest, like it scared the life out of me. I'm like, I can't tell somebody I feel like this. It's like, I can't write that on paper. I can't admit that to myself. I mean, again, the dialogue wasn't quite as articulate as that. But that's essentially what was going on. And it really made me recognize how unsafe I felt to actually only share it with somebody else, which would create connection, ironically, but it could really, really be supportive for me. But I just couldn't do it. Like it just didn't feel okay to face that with my own handwriting. And I think that's quite surprisingly to me. Like I didn't realize how common that was until I also went and worked with a therapist and did the work and all the rest of it. And I think safety is so underrated. I think we and this is a big generalization, but I think we live in a very, very dysregulated society. I think we have as a collective, we've fallen out of what our natural rhythm can be. And I think we have lost our ability to be anchored into a place of resource. And I think that is then very challenging when we try to then adopt that within our own system, literally in our nervous system. And I think our ability to feel safe has a huge impact on that. I'd love to hear your thoughts around kind of like safety and then this idea of looking in the mirror at your own thoughts and feelings.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. I was actually going to ask you what you did to break through that fear of facing yourself, because it's not something that I have personally worked with people on. People that come to me are almost like they're ready, just ready to face it, because it's impacting them so much that they know they need to do something about it. But with that being said, I also know a lot of people who are afraid of facing themselves, and they don't know what to do with that. I actually don't know what the answer is, but I'd love to hear what you went through, because I think that would be.
I went down the same path that most people went down, in the sense of I made it get to a point where it was really bad. I had no choice.
Okay,
I,
yeah.
you know,
So
so it wasn't like this magical moment, you know, where it was like, oh, this is the thing to do. Like, no, I'm human like everybody else. But it's so fascinating though, because even then, when I did reach out for help, I sent an email. I couldn't pick up the phone. I literally sent an email and I was just like, I think I need help. And this lovely lady like replied and was just like, okay, like, and I went pretty much straight away the next day. And even in that moment, I only still shared with her what I thought I could. And I held back massively. And it's interesting because you see that typically in coaching as well, depending on what level it is which we're coaching and what we're coaching about. But it can take some time for somebody to suddenly tell you all of the things they wish they could have told you in the very first instance. And I definitely been on that journey. And to be honest, like podcast helped. To share bits of my story, I'd share a bit of something and then a bit of something else and a bit of something else. And this whole journey of the last few years, really, of this podcast has been articulating my experience. So I think it can come in different ways. I'm an avid journaler. Our listeners will know that. Now I can't stop journaling. I'm probably the
It's
other
so
end of
good.
the but the facing the fear of looking in the mirror, it was the thing that changed the game for me. It was. And I needed help to do that. And I think that is also really important. And I needed that nice lady to actually, you know, open the door and say, yeah, okay, like lay it out for me. What's happening? And I think that is often the starting point, isn't it? It's having a safe space where you can actually just start to
To
share.
share.
And it might not even be sharing what's going on in your head or anything. It might just be, oh, I'm just feeling a bit meh today. It's something.
Yeah,
You know,
that's the start.
yeah.
That's the start. Yeah, totally agree. And I think especially working one-to-one with someone, it's almost like you learn how to open up and how to be more safe through the space that somebody else is holding for you. So yeah, I think that if journaling for yourself, I mean, just put yourself in a situation where you can at least start to try, even just in the tiniest step, like you said, in just saying, I don't feel good.
Exactly. Yes,
That's a start.
something's not right. I don't know what it is. Like
Yeah.
that is the perfect place to start. And interestingly, there's a step that happens before that, which is very common. I probably did it. I don't remember it distinctively, but I know people do this. One of the most searched things on Google is like, why do I feel like this? Right. Sometimes there's emotion there, but often is why do I feel like this? They can't even necessarily name it or understand why. Find that so interesting. We've actually launched something very recently, which is being beta tested at the moment with our community, which is like an AI coach, where it's actually almost like you're not asking the world of Google. No, you're
Yeah.
asking our team of coaches, but completely anonymously. So they can literally just like plug into that and say, why do I feel like this? And they will literally coach through a line of questioning. Like Hugh said,
Wow.
it's going a few layers deeper. Not a substitute for coaching or therapy at all, but it is a support tool that can help people, obviously, already on a coaching journey. And also to bridge that gap between feeling a certain way and then not knowing what to do about it. Another
Wow.
really common
That's
thing.
amazing. That's amazing.
It's pretty.
Yeah. And it's crazy how we, but no, I'm not gonna like overgeneralize, but actually quite a lot of people don't know how to identify what their emotions are. They're not taught the language of their feelings. And I was exactly the same. That was a huge part of the work that I was doing as well when I was healing from my eating disorder, because I was obviously trying to suppress something. I had no idea what it was. And so I had to learn how to understand my emotions, and I had to change my relationship to my emotions. And I think that's the biggest thing that anyone can do. I know someone in my life who actually does struggle with a few things in when it comes to facing their emotions. They have such a resistance with sitting with themselves and to actually allow themselves to feel the heaviness of whatever they're going through and to reflect on it. But the kind of advice that I gave to them, which might be helpful, is like your emotions are always going to be there. And it's almost like you're trying to fight a war against something that is never going to die. So instead of, making it worse and pushing and pushing and pushing and trying to avoid it and ending up with these the whole list of problems because of you not being able to sit with them, you can learn to build tolerance to them. You know, they don't have to be comfortable in order for you to face them. It will be uncomfortable, but they're also not dangerous. It's actually more dangerous when we try and fight against them. So it's like if we get used to being uncomfortable with and sit with the feelings, actually they won't be as uncomfortable, but they're so uncomfortable now because we're not sitting with them. And it's just like it's a catch 22, isn't it?
It's living in that illusion that it's better if I don't think about it. And I'm like, but is it really? Because we
No.
put so much energy into avoiding it. Where could that energy be spent, right? And that's where it starts to be better spent in your relationships and in to achieve. It does fascinate me because it's such a human journey that we're all on. And I do actually think, we were talking about media earlier. I do think that it plays a part because for me, emotions were they scare the life out of me because of the intensity of them. And it was an unresolved emotion from the past that was catching up on me, that was being triggered in my daily life through different types of relationships, be that work or personally. And it just got to a point of like overspill. It got to the point I couldn't ignore them anymore. And I think we all get to that at some point on our journey if we haven't learned to associate with our feelings. It's like they will suddenly come and slap you in the face and you know they're there. And if we don't pay attention, it will just get worse. And I hate really saying it like that because it's almost a bit like scaremongering, but I just wish somebody had told me sooner.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's not, I don't think it's fear-mongering. It's just facts. Like the body is so intelligent, it will rebel if you don't deal with it, with the stuff that's going on inside it. It's just, yeah.
And I think a big
And prevention is better than cure.
always 100%. I think a big contributing factor for me with this, with emotions, was also that, I was brought up in that is like you don't really show how you feel. Nobody ever said that. Nobody ever said, right, don't show your emotions. I mean, maybe they did, and subconsciously I've kind of taken that in, but it was more from modeling other people around me, right? And then social media, it wasn't as big as it was now then, but it was very much you see all the good stuff, right? So it was like, well, if we don't see the bad stuff, it must be bad. We must sit in shame behind closed doors and deal with this on our own. And that was the model of the world that I lived in, and it wasn't healthy for anyone.
It's not healthy. Definitely not healthy. I think things are definitely changing now, but again, it takes some awareness to be mindful of what you're consuming and who you're following. Yeah, for sure.
And I agree with that completely. Like you said earlier, it's that choice of what are you choosing to follow on your feed, right? And in your actual reality in your life as well. But more importantly, like look at yourself as to why are you feeling the need to lean into this? And that really is where the power lies.
Totally agree.
So if they've listened to this point, they're like, okay, right, I get it. I need to look inside. I need to stop avoiding. Right, and they're like, okay, Sarah, okay, Charlotte, stop it now, move on. Like, now what do I do? Right, and we've touched upon the idea of safety, right? And I think sometimes, and I'd love to know if this is aligned with your way of thinking and how you typically coach, but because you've created a really nice safe space within your community, so you know a thing or two about this. You've been doing this for a while, so you probably know more than me in this context. So I'm really curious to know, like, what are the elements of safety that somebody can perhaps start to adopt with themselves to give them the confidence to maybe go and then search for a community like yours?
So I think in order to create safety with yourself, you have to start by treating yourself differently. And I think like the self-compassion thing has been so big for me and for everyone else that I've worked with in creating that safety, because we can feel so alone in what we're experiencing, which makes us want to close up even more. We don't feel safe. And because I lost my train of thought, but when we are isolating ourselves, when we're feeling ashamed of ourselves and we don't want to face whatever it is within us, then we're never going to feel safe enough to open up to anyone else. So if we want to start being more safe to ourselves, we start by kind of learning how to treat ourselves like something that we care about. That starts with self-talk, I think. You know, a lot of times we are so judgmental over our thoughts and our feelings and ourselves, and we would never ever ever say the same things to anyone else in our lives that we care about, even over the same things that we are critical of ourselves over. You know, we're always so understanding towards other people. And sometimes it actually helps us to separate ourselves from ourselves and, you know, take a step outside of the situation and the narrative in your head and say, okay, what would I say to somebody I love who is in this situation? And when you start giving that to yourself, then things start to change. Then you start to open up because you haven't put all of these walls up and like trying to protect yourself from yourself, you know? You're learning how to become your own friend. I think that's one thing.
That's so powerful just on that as well. And I really appreciate you bringing compassion back into the conversation from earlier, because I think it's so necessary, and it's almost like a lost art and a lost skill, I think. It's a lost emotion, because it's a feeling, isn't it? Compassion. And I think there's something that we do with clients that might be useful for anyone listening, is if you're in that position and you know that that self-talk is pretty dire, then to just simply set yourself the challenge to just observe the thinking and like zoom out of it, perhaps write it down, but have a picture, like you've said, perhaps of somebody that you love and you care about. And ideally, if it's a child, even better. And have that down on the, like, next to the paper where you've written your things. And then on the other side of the paper, start to write, how would I say something kind to this child if they was experiencing this? And it's so powerful. Like, there's so many just moments of realization along that journey of like, oh, why would I do that to myself, actually? And usually it's habitual, rather than, sometimes it's not even that there's anything like deep and dark going on. You know, it doesn't mean that you've got like years and years of trauma and baggage to go and let go of. Sometimes it is just habitual. And then till you shine a spotlight on it, you don't have the opportunity to be compassionate.
Totally agree. Yeah, I love that exercise. That was literally a daily practice for me, and it's one that I give to pretty much everyone that I've ever worked with because it is so powerful. And it just takes a little bit of a perspective shift for you to then start changing the way that you're relating to yourself and the way that you feel about things. So I think that that is super important in terms of creating the safety. And I think, you know, obviously getting comfortable with your feeling, your emotions, and getting comfortable with the vulnerability, that requires a lot of work. And if it feels very big and scary, work with a professional to help you get there. But if you're wondering, how can I start changing my relationship to my emotions? Like if I'm at home and I'm feeling sad. One thing that you could do, again, I'm going to go into the journaling because it's just
Work. So it just
journaling is so good. Journaling is so good because it helps you to process what you're feeling, and it helps you in a way to release it instead of suppressing it in. And when you process your emotions in that way, you're able to actually see that they're not going to hurt you. They're more harmful when you keep them in. And another thing that I've found has been helpful with when it comes to getting comfortable with emotions is to actually, again, it comes a bit to detaching yourself from it and seeing it as an energy that's trying to tell you something about what you need. So if you're, you know, feeling this overwhelming sadness, there's usually a big narrative that is attached to that. If you can maybe step outside of the chatter in your brain and connect to your body and just like take a few deep breaths and feel like, where is that feeling in my body? What is the texture of it? How heavy is it? Is it light? Is it heavy? Does it have a color? You're going away from the stuff that usually makes it so difficult to handle it, and you're just being present with it. And once you do that, you should feel a bit more regulated to then be able to say, okay, you know, what is this trying to tell me? What do I need right now? And how can you give that need to yourself? And through doing that for yourself, you start to build the safety.
That's so powerful. It's funny that that's basically what one of our kind of coaching tools is like your emotional ID steps. And it's like, what, like, where do we begin with that? And some people, they can immediately connect to the actual feeling. and they can connect to that sensation, but they can't name it. Some can name it, but they can't feel it. So it's okay. Like, so for anybody that's just listened to that exercise, because you described it beautifully there, Sarah, is to just know that however you do that in the beginning is fine, right? Some of it's going to be easy, some of it's going to be hard, but in the end of the day, it is about you fulfilling your own needs and understanding and shining the light on it. I often actually explain emotions a little bit like the boogeyman under the bed, like for if and then if you shine the spotlight on them, like it's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's going to become more scary. But when you switch the light on, go through those steps that you just mentioned, actually put the light on, then there actually is nothing there anymore, and actually everything, you can go back to sleep again. And so
I love that.
I totally get like where you're saying that that links into a sense of safety. I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, for sure. And it's like when we start to get more comfortable with our own vulnerability, then of course we can start being more vulnerable with other people. And that is the key actually to creating real deep connection, is to be able to be vulnerable with other people. And I think a lot of this is like talking about what you can do for yourself and your feelings and everything like that, but it really does impact everything to do with your relationships. And the one other thing I would add, I'd say, is like to find evidence that vulnerability doesn't lead to rejection, because obviously we have our beliefs and they've been built based on our experiences and the meaning that we've made out of them. And I think the strongest way to break a belief is to find evidence against it. So if you think, you don't feel safe to open up in your relationship with someone because you're afraid that you're going to get rejected, can you think of a time that somebody opened up to you and it actually made you closer? And if you think about all of the different scenarios where that's happened, you can start reframing the way that you feel about opening up. And I think it makes things a lot easier as well.
It really hits home what you said there. Like, some when I think of my the friendships that I have and my relationships, all whether they be family, whether they be like Jonathan, who our listeners know, my obviously husband and business partner and everything else. He we have like all of the relationships. If I kind of lay them all out, I'm like, anybody that's seen me when I'm like at my lowest, and definitely the people that I'm closest to, hands down. If they've seen me in those like ugly tears, then they're a keeper, and like they're people that I would go to in any moment. And that I have found that they're few and far between in my own life for sure. But that's been a part of my journey, and being able to be vulnerable, like you said. So, and I think it's I share that because it is a journey. You don't just suddenly get to that point. You don't just meet somebody and go, oh, we click. I'm going to tell you all my deepest, darkest secrets. Lay everything out for you. No, it's that you go through stuff, right? And the right people are there for you often. Do you see that a lot with the people that you work with and in your community?
Yeah, for sure. I
I
think,
think
like you
like
said, it is a journey and everyone kind of already expects themselves to be there. But we have to also remember that trust is something that is built, and we have to have trust in order to feel safe. So we could also still do all of this work on ourselves and enter a relationship. It doesn't mean that we're suddenly going to be like, oh,
For sure.
even if they're super nice people, you need consistent, again, I'm going to come back to evidence because that's literally the key to everything. You need consistent evidence that you can trust this person. And the more that the trust builds, the easier you will find it to open up and the safer that you'll feel. That's it.
Definitely. I'm reflecting on mine and Jonathan's relationship as you say that as well, because like a lot of people, I don't know if our listeners actually know that we've probably talked about at some point on this journey, but basically in our early years when we first got together, we got together about 6 months ish, and I started to pull away, and then the relationship just sort of like it just come to an end, but it definitely wasn't over, but it come to an end, and it was like, what is going on here? And it was me for sure. It was me. Like, and now, like at the time, I wouldn't have admitted that at all, right? But now Jonathan will firmly be like, yes, you was running away, and it was for that very reason. Like, I'd done a certain amount of like healing and personal development work, But then it was like, whoa, now this is a big step going into a relationship that I genuinely cared about. So I suddenly felt unsafe because the safety of that relationship was actually triggering unsafety within me again because I hadn't done
That's, yeah.
So it was revealing something to me. Unfortunately for me, I didn't run too far and we ended up kind of coming back together. But we both had to go and kind of do our own work before we could come back together. And I think that's a real testament to why we're here in the way that we are and been married for a bunch of years.
A bunch of years.
6 years.
Oh my
I'm terrible. Jonathan's the one that remembers all this stuff. But yeah, it's not because I don't love him any less. We
God.
have this like really interesting relationship where now there is such a level of vulnerability that's present, but I don't think we've ever have got there if neither one of us was willing to face ourselves as individuals.
Yeah, totally. I think that's such a beautiful story. And it's so true for most intimate relationships. Like the trust does have to be built, but at the same time, there are going to be ways that you hold yourself back the closer that you get, because it is scary.
And it was,
Yeah.
I didn't trust myself. It wasn't that I didn't trust him or anything else. It's that there was something in me that still didn't trust myself because now I'm feeling all of these feelings and I'm running away again. Right, I'm trying to avoid the emotions again that I didn't couldn't name at the time. Right? So it's just this weird Pandora's box that opens, I think, sometimes when we get into relationships.
Yeah,
But
for
we have
sure.
to really look at them. And I really love what you said earlier about meeting your own needs. I think that's exceptionally powerful, is that we need to be able to meet our own needs before we expect somebody else to just like meet them for us. What's your
Yeah,
thoughts?
absolutely. Yeah. I think that with this, it's like you need to be able to meet your needs for sure, because you don't want to be dependent on somebody else to fulfill you. And I think obviously there's some needs that you don't meet for yourself in the same way that a relationship would meet for you. And I say this because I think it can be really easy for people to just expect that they shouldn't expect anyone else to meet their needs, because they should be able to fulfill all their needs, which is another problem in itself, because there are certain needs that you'll have in a relationship that actually somebody else should fulfill for you, and that's fine. But I think the difference is like when you are able to build a stable foundation for yourself, where it's not that you don't need anyone else in your life to be happy, but so that you feel quite fulfilled and you have that sense of wholeness in yourself, that when you meet someone, you can just be two in like independent people that are coming together and adding to each other's lives, as opposed to being, so someone who's heavily relying on somebody else to meet the needs for all your feelings and all your intimacy and all that kind of stuff, because that becomes a heavy burden as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think there got come to a point in our relationship where I suddenly realized that I was expecting something from John that he didn't have the capacity to give me, not because he didn't care, but because actually that's just not his thing. Right? Like, why does he want to hear about all of the ins and outs of whatever it is that was going on with me at that point? It's not that he didn't want to, it's just that he didn't know what to do with that. So why am I expecting him to know? Like, it wasn't fair on him for me to be able to approach it that way. And I think that's just one of many different examples, I think, in relationships where we perhaps look to the other person instead of looking to ourselves. What's quite interesting is we have, so I am actually a relationship coach. It's not what I do as our bread and butter, but it's something that often when we work with people, sometimes the partner almost like gets involved at certain points, depending on obviously the situations. And the expectation sometimes is well, we'll do a session together. Like the two people in the partnership will come to the session together. We say, okay, we'll get to that, but first we need to have these conversations separately, and then we'll come together. 9 times out of 10, they don't have to ever have a session together. They just need to know. They just need to have an awareness of what their needs actually are, and then understand how they fulfill them. So, okay, cool, go away. Let's do a set of tasks around that, and then if we still need to come back together later, let's come back together later. Leave it as an option. 9 times out of 10, it's not even
They
necessary.
don't need it.
It's the
Wow, I love
awareness.
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
What are some of the needs that you think people need in a relationship that are perhaps not being met, but there's an expectation that they should be?
that are not being met, but there's an expectation. So the question is, what are the needs that should be met but aren't being met? Was that the question? Okay. I mean, if you're in a relationship where these needs are not being met, I think it's time to reevaluate the relationship. But I think the fundamental needs is obviously to feel safe, the need to feel valued, the need to feel understood and heard by your partner. Like these are the things that make a healthy relationship. And of course, you can, give the safety to yourself. And there's a difference between feeling valued and expecting someone to always validate you. But I think the needs that surround that are what makes the healthy relationship. So I'll give you more specific examples. One of the needs to feel heard is to be able to feel that your whoever is your friend or your partner is actually interested in what you have to say and actually listens to what you're saying and reflects that back to you. So they're engaged with you, that they are present with you. That's a big need. And sometimes people can not meet that need because they're distracted by other things. Maybe they're too stressed. Coming back to the stats that we were talking about earlier, if you're too stressed or if you're distracted with your work, you're not really being present with someone, you're not listening to them, you're not asking them questions. That's a big thing. So I think that's one of the most important ones that every relationship should have, but maybe not every relationship does have.
Yep, definitely.
The second one of feeling valued, and this is actually really good because I'm tying it all back to the research that you mentioned earlier. If you're getting complacent in your relationships and you're not making the effort, you're not, affirming your appreciation for your friends or your partner or anything like that, that's going to create a disconnect between you. That's a very important need, and one of the things that the most successful relationships, based on research, the most successful relationships have like mutual appreciation, and they don't lose it. They constantly make the effort to do that. So if that's lost and you're complacent and you're just going through the day to day and you're not really appreciating, the people that you have, then that's going to cause issues as well. So yeah, and I think the understood thing ties down with the being heard and things like that, but also it comes down to the way that you handle conflict together.
Yes. Yep. Yeah,
So
I think that's massive, isn't it? And I think often
yeah.
it's the two former things that you mentioned that actually create conflict if they're not being met, right? So there's been times for sure where like I'm expecting Jonathan to like see me, hear me, appreciate me, and but I know he's busy. So it's like, okay, so there's gonna be conflict there, right? It's almost like picking a fight to some extent. And it's just like, so it does take two people. So it might not always be the person that's distracted. I think it's important to mention there. But it's interesting what you said about the appreciation thing, because I think that is actually a real superpower. I didn't know that was part of the stats in there. And I say to John all the time, like all the reasons why I appreciate him. It's like, why do you keep telling me this?
But the appreciation is it's a part of research that's done by the Gottman Institute. And they've been researching what creates the strongest relationships for like decades. And they've been doing research on the things that break relationships. And it's all intertwined. But I thought it was really relevant to the complacency thing because you do get comfortable and you stop making an effort.
Yeah, definitely.
And that destroys relationships for sure.
Yeah, definitely. It really does. So there's a thing that John and I do. So if there's anybody in a relationship that thinks that maybe that's happening, we have like a John day or a Charlotte day, depending on what it is. And we don't like just set it. It's not in the calendar or anything, but it's if you sense that they need a a John Day
The
or
day.
instances that I need a Charlotte Day, then we almost like claim it. We're like, okay, this is your day and this is why. And it's nice. And I don't really know how that happened. We just sort of started to do it. And
I
it
love it.
worked well because it breaks us out of a sense of complacency for sure, because it is easy
Yeah.
to become complacent. And I think
Very.
that's also important to own, because
Yeah.
we are human. Like, whether you're in a relationship or not, life can be complacent at times, and it's up to us, like you said, to lean into what we value as well, to make it something.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I like that you said that because I think maybe there's an expectation that, the relationship should always be the same as, let's say, when you were in the honeymoon phase, and you should always be infatuated with each other, and things should always be exciting, and you always be curious to hear what the other person has to say, and everything's going to be perfect. But it actually takes a lot of work to maintain that kind of standard. And I think as long as you're two people that are willing to do the work to make the relationship work, then you got nothing to worry about. But yeah, it is completely normal. Like, even with my partner, we moved in together, and then we started going through the day-to-day motions. But we're two people who, this might be helpful. We have a weekly life dinner, we call it.
Nice.
So, we'll either do the dinner at home, or we'll go out somewhere nice and get dressed up. And we've got four areas of our lives that we take the chance to reflect on. And one of those areas is our relationship. So we ask ourselves questions like, what was one thing that happened this week that made me feel really connected to you? And what was one way we felt that we may have neglected the relationship? And we have these open conversations with each other so that we are able to, not get lost in the day to day, make sure that we are vocally appreciating each other consistently, and that we're also being open about the things that way where we feel like we can improve. So when we noticed that, we were getting complacent, I also put in a Sarah day, and we said maybe we should, have more time apart. And it's worked. Things are back to good now. So
Nice.
yeah.
It's very interesting, and I think like it's so cool that you shared that, because there's all these little things, like it's like you'll find what works for you. And I think that is also important in relationships. Just because one relationship person says this or it works for them, it's going to be different.
Yeah.
And there'll be people listening to this for sure that'll be like, there's no way I'm ever going to get my partner to talk about this thing, right? Or to ask themselves those questions. And but that's where it comes back to what you rightly said, that we have to really check, is this the right relationship for me? Because if you want to
Yeah.
be having those conversations and the other person is just not even willing to entertain the idea, you have to start to look at, okay, well, what is this relationship based upon, and where do you both want it
Yeah.
to go? That is
I
really
love that. That's so true. Yeah, that's so true.
So, Sarah, what is it about relationships? I promise you, I'm wrapping up now because I just glanced
Yeah, that's okay. We're over time.
at the clock. What is something that's not being spoken about in relationships? Or in relation, let me ask that question again. What is not being spoken about in relation to relationships that you think we should be, that should be in the handbook?
Oh wow.
Sorry, I didn't prep you.
Wow.
So.
That's a really good question. There's so many things, I think, but what's not being spoken about enough, I think, is I think it comes back to exactly what we spoke about in this session, because a lot of people that I know, when they're looking for help on relationships, they're like, how do I get the guy to text me back? Or how do I spot the red flags? Or, where do I meet someone who has XYZ? But not enough people are asking, like, am I the person that I need to be to attract the relationships that I want? Or not to attract, but, am I creating an environment within myself and through my actions and choices in life that are bringing me towards the kind of relationships that I want to have? So I would literally just go back full circle on that.
What a beautiful question to ask, though.
I love that question.
Am I being the person I need to be to attract the relationships I want?
Thanks.
Yeah,
What
I love that.
would yours be? I want to know what yours is. What do you think is not being spoken about enough?
I think the ownership of relationships. I think we have a choice, right? I truly believe we have a choice to live from a place of conditioning, creation, or contribution. And I think when we choose to live from our conditioning, that's completely okay, right? If we are conscious of our conditioning and we are going into relationships knowing why we're going into them. But often, on the most part, we go into relationships and we're projecting mum or dad, typically, or caregivers into the situation. And when we do that blindly, relationships typically end in disaster. There's a re reason why divorce rates are so high, I think. So I think we have the choice to live in this conditioned place, but then we have a choice to create the experiences we want. We get this beautiful blank canvas to ask that question, right? Is like, am I being the person I need to be to create the life that I want and to have the friendships and the intimate relationships and the work relationships that I want to have? And I think then we almost like escalate a little bit into this place of contribution, because I think when we start to see our relationships as something we contribute to, not in a people pleasing way, but in an enhancing way, in a way that we can amplify each other, whether that be in a friendship or in a intimate relationship, I think we all are somewhere on that spectrum. And I think when we start to lean into that contribution place, having come from the journey of conditioning to creation, I think to have that extra spark and they become even more meaningful.
I
So I
love
think
that.
that'd be my answer.
I really love that. I love the whole contribution piece as well, because I think you can just be like, well, what do I want? What do I want? You always think about yourself. You don't think about what you're giving.
Yeah.
I love that.
I think it's a real game changer. And don't get me wrong, it's not as clear cut as that. I don't think we go and we like graduate from conditioning and we graduate to creation and now we can contribute. No, I think it's always this beautiful dance with all of it, you know, and it's all in somewhere. But when we start to intentionally question where are we living on that spectrum, I think then that extra little bit of zest and that extra bit more empowerment to be able to actually do something in your life that you want to do. And I think there's a very compassionate act to bring that back in what you said earlier, because I think compassion is the name of the game
The
in like all
key.
relationships.
Yeah. Totally,
I
totally agree.
wish I'd known that sooner. I wish I had.
Me too, but better late than
Exactly.
never.
Sarah, so I know you're working on some great things. Obviously, you've got your community here in Dubai, which you host lots of amazing events, which we'll make sure obviously the links are in the show notes. People can come and obviously find those. But you're also working on a course, which I'm really fascinated to see. And I know that we've got the VIP link, the waiting list for our listeners to come on so they can be the first to know about the course. Do you want to tell our listeners a bit about that though?
Yeah, so basically, you know how I said I wish I had an instruction manual?
You made
I'm
one.
literally creating the instruction manual.
Boom. That's living in creation and contribution right there.
I mean, in all seriousness, it's basically going to take you through a journey of addressing two things. The first one and foremost, like what we spoke about mostly in this conversation, is your relationship with yourself and your relationship to your beliefs and the perspective that you have about relationships that are impacting your relationships. So starting with you, and then moving on to the other stage, which is where you actually start paying attention to the relationships and boundaries and like the external things, having your needs met by somebody else, etc. So it's a journey that will take you through to ultimately help you create healthier relationships with yourself and others.
Nice. I love that so much. Here's a question for you, and I'm curious to know. Is there anything in there around like masculine and feminine energy?
No, there actually isn't.
I think that's an interesting topic. I think
It's a very interesting.
you need to do everything that you've just shared first, I think, before you start going down the
Next,
rabbit
the
hole.
masculine, feminine.
Yeah, I think there's some real brilliant basics that we need to understand about relationships. And that's clearly what you're covering in that handbook for sure. But handbook number two, I'd be really curious
Masculine, feminine.
to see masculine and feminine energy, because I think that plays a massive role in relationship to self and to others. Perhaps that's another thing I'd add, doesn't get spoken about
No,
enough.
I actually love that. I love that, especially in reference to the relationship that you have with yourself as well.
Yeah, it's a
Love
biggie.
it.
Amazing. Well, I'm excited for your course for one, and I'm sure our listeners will be too. So we'll add that in the show notes. You're also a podcast host. Tell our listeners what your podcast is about and where they can find that as well.
So my podcast is all about, again, how to create healthier relationships, and you can find it on YouTube. I've got a weird username because I don't have enough followers to change it. But if you just type in Sarah Boutross, hopefully you'll find me. But I'll
That's
give
not
you
a
the link
weird
directly to
username.
direct.
That's not
That's
weird.
not my username, but you know when you type it into the search bar,
Okay. Well, everybody that's listening or watching this, go to YouTube, subscribe so she can update her handle to wherever she wants it to be.
Thank you.
Sarah, listen, thank you so much for coming on today. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I really appreciate you and the work that you're doing. I think it's really meaningful and the world needs it now more than ever. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Charlotte. It's been lovely chatting to you and learning from you as well.
If you enjoyed this episode and you haven't done so already, hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode.
Then share it with a friend who you think might benefit.
Spread the word. That's how we're going to impact the world, by helping each other.
We appreciate you so much, and as always, unconditional love and wellness to you.